announcements. My authorization to give to Mike on right here.
How you doing? My name's Mark. And after almost 6 months of being in this building, we discovered that we have two meetings that have two racks each. And we got a very small locker. So we had a meeting last week and we decided that we could afford to use the same two. And so we're going to give these two away. So if you'd like a rack for the meeting that you go to, please see the literature people back at the back of the room and you can get a rack.
All right, please help me in welcoming tonight's speaker, Joe.
Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Joe, a member of Al-Anon. The late Winnie Eddy, whom a lot of people with more time recall with great fondness, used to say, "It's slightly intimidating to go to a room where people know your story." Willie, in about 26 seconds, would tell you he's making that crap up. So you kind of have to tell your story. And I want you to know I never particularly wanted or liked my story. After years of telling it to people who apparently thought I had something to say, I realized one day that apparently my story is the one that God intended me to have. I didn't have a whole lot of choice in the matter. My sponsor says that God's will is going to happen. And so I don't spend a lot of time praying against God's will. You know, the 11th step says praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So today I got an email from a trusted dear friend at work, and she said a young man who's a colleague of ours, 40 years old, had a heart attack. And she said, pray asking for God's favor. No, I ask praying for God's will, and that God would comfort that individual, and that he would know that he's surrounded by light and love, and thy will be done. That was what we pray in the Lord's Prayer, right? Thy will be done. So I'm the oldest son of a Skid Row alcoholic. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, joined Al-Anon in 1987. And I honestly can tell you folks, I did not come to Al-Anon for any of the usual or the right reasons. I was in a professional practice in Sherman Oaks, and my colleagues called me in, and it was, you know, you would call it an intervention if I were a drunk. And what troubles me in my Al-Anon story is just about everything I'm going to talk about, I did sober. You know, kids from an alcoholic home can say, you know, mom or dad, when they're on the sauce, mm-mm. The person they can't explain is the one who does really nut up things sober in the house. Like, what was the sober spouse's deal there? What's going on there? Explain that one to me, Lucy. Dad was a union brick mason, and the progression of the disease of alcoholism in our house was kind of as follows. And I can't get the ages I was right, but I can tell you the progression real well. Because part of why I'm here is I'm really good at watching others. When I was about three, I remember living in a garage apartment near my grandparents' house, south of Steubenville, Ohio. And my dad had been kind of a full-charge contractor, but to please the meddling grandparents, he was laying fire brick in a steel mill. And I don't think that probably helped his drinking a lot. And I could remember he would come in after work about 7:30 or 8, plowed every night. And it's probably not news to you that people in construction you know, hit the bottle about 3:30 most every day. This is not news, right? But it particularly happened to me. I have the perspective of a lot of years in much worse seating than this. By the time I was about in sixth grade, I would have been about 11. Dad would start at happy hour, but happy hour would run until about 1 or 2 when the bars closed. And my mom would be standing at the window or the door asking two questions that invariably pissed off my father. Where have you been? And what have you been doing? Now, I'm not the smartest person, but by the time I was about the age of 7, I thought to myself, Mom, he was at the bar drinking. And if you keep asking him that stuff, it sets him off. It doesn't go well at 2 in the morning when you want to talk and interview and explain things to him. Years after that, my dad had a slip. He finally did get sober, but my sister said she sat up one night talking to him about 3 a.m. And the next morning she said to him, "Wow, Dad, you really opened up. That was a great conversation we had last night, wasn't it?" And he goes, "What conversation?" So we all know about blackout drinking in Al-Anon, but you don't know that when you just keep doing your deal and there's no recovery in the house. You're just kind of, I watch bull riding, you know, where those guys spend about 12 minutes tying themselves onto a bull. You know, my mom was riding the alcoholic and would be lying on the ground one more time going, "What hit me?" You know, like doing the same things, expecting different results. And you would think that that would be about all it took, with several drunk driving arrests and bar fights and being in and out of jail. By the way, bar fights today are felonies. They were misdemeanors when I was a kid. I'm 62. A lot of this occurred in the 50s. And so the good old boy sheriff and police department would just kind of take you in for drunk and disorderly, and you'd be back on the street on bail in about 3 days and get a little hand slap. And so my dad rotated in and out of the state mental hospital and the county jail for years. And you would think that would maybe get somebody to a meeting. You know, today we're blessed to have judges and lawyers who understand, get that guy's butt to an AA meeting. They didn't understand that in the 50s. And so what I will tell you, in about 1957 in Phoenix, Arizona, at Arizona State Mental Hospital, is they put the drunks behind the schizophrenics. You know, you got to be pretty bad off to be below a schizophrenic. And they didn't know what to do with drunks. And it got worse. Finally, my mother joined Al-Anon. And they asked her a rhetorical question. Why would he get sober if you make dinner for him every night? Now, she made dinner every night at 5 for a guy who wasn't arriving until 2 a.m. I mean, as I listen to this, I think, how crazy is that? I would think I was making this up. It sounds like a comedy routine. That was my house. Stop laughing. No. By the way, that reminds me, I love the levity in Al-Anon meetings, that we laugh about things we formerly cried about. You know, I had a deja vu about birthday night, Luis. I remember hating birthday meetings when I was new and so miserable, because I perceived you getting a birthday as cutting into my complaining time. My My attitude has improved over the years. No, Melody's shaking her head no. I now see it as a cavalcade or a showcase of recovery. And so happy birthday to our birthday people who have ridden these chairs all these years, gotten sponsors, worked the steps. Yes, suffered through the blueprint for progress. Whatever your sponsor may have done to you. Well, Dad ended up on Skid Row because those Al-Anon ladies said to her, "Why should he get sober when you do everything for him?" You know, I'd hear her on the morning when he was just hungover talking about how sick he was, the Monday morning flu to his boss. And she would get a ride to go. She didn't drive. That was part of her dependence on him. She would get a ride to the liquor store or the bar and cover his bad checks. And she would be on the phone begging the power company and the gas company not to turn the utilities off. By then, she had four small kids at home. And it was sad watching my mother cry. So finally, my mother found the courage in Al-Anon, I believe, to say to him, "You can do that, you're a grown man, but you can't do it here. Your drinking is ruining our family." And she threw his butt out. And I've been told by members of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I've done a little bit of speaking in Southern California, "Joe, your story is important because we don't get those low bottom drunks in AA as much as we used to. You're part of that group." You know, the old understanding ourselves used to say, understanding alcoholism, only 3 to 5% of alcoholics are drunks, are bums or skid row types. We've cleaned that up now. It says something about derelicts. That just sounds like somebody who missed a few church services. But when I heard only 3 to 5% of alcoholics are bums or skid row types, I knew your program applied to me. Because you see, I was a son of a man who peddled handbills to be able to buy some Thunderbird hooch in the morning and get loaded. Because he went into DTs when he didn't drink from withdrawal. He was a real drunk. Or my dad, this is scary, he would go down and sell his blood to be able to buy booze. You could probably get high off his blood. Now, I'm telling you this today because they're just simply the biographical facts of my life. I want you to know I don't feel an ounce of pain. I don't have any anger about any of this anymore as a result of working the Al-Anon program. Much of that has been healed among people like you in places like this. And so if there's somebody sitting out there with my exact story of an alcoholic father who told you, "You will never amount to anything when you're about 3 years old," and just cutting your heart out and filling you with rage until you're about 40, and can't get a date with anybody who isn't nuts. Listen up. I do not know, out of whatever type of insanity I brought to Al-Anon, what motivated me to listen or to do what you said, but in my first month, I met my sponsor, who's here tonight, and I asked him to sponsor me. And he said to me, "You know, you're educated and supposed to know how to fix people." He said, "What could I possibly do for you?" And I said, "Well, in all my years in the classroom, nobody ever spent 1 hour on the topic, how do I have a nice day?" He said, "I think I can help you with that." So I started to say, I'm in this professional group in Sherman Oaks. And they brought me in and said, "You know, you're sicker than a lot of the customers."
And if you don't get help, we're going to boot you out. You're gone, buddy. I have rarely met Al-Anons who came to Al-Anon not unlike a Prop 36 drunk on a court card. I was a low-bottom Al-Anon. I was either going to get here and get some recovery, or I was going to lose my job. I was no longer cute anymore. You know, in my 20s and 30s, I could find ladies who would say, "Dang, that's a terrible story, poor Joe." And what I finally figured out is women, after a while, kind of resent it if you're a wounded little boy. It's not a natural thing for grown women to want to have sex with their sons. And so what's left is a group of women who are just not buying it anymore. They would say, you know, after about the third date, "Buddy, you are so sick. Get lost." Or I would find somebody as crazy and angry as I was. Now, here's the kicker. Crazy women are great in bed. So I was stuck there for a number of years. That'll slow you down 5, 10, 15 years. Working on that that formula. So I ask my sponsor to sponsor me, and he says yes, and we start working on the how do I be happy for 1 hour, one day at a time. So this is the truth, and he later told me it was because it was halfway between where we live, but the truth is we met at possibly the worst Denny's in Hollywood or anywhere every Thursday morning for 3 years. And I thought this was like my own personal complaining time. And Richard would interrupt me, and after about 12 to 18 minutes of complaining, he would say, "What step are we on?" Now, by the way, that's why they have numbers in front of them. One of the reasons they're numbered is so you can tell your sponsor what step you're on. So you know what step you're on. Just thought I'd offer that as a little feedback. And the truth was, we weren't on any step. I was complaining, and the question upset me. And so I would ask those brilliant Socratic rhetorical questions, like, "What do you mean?" So the explanation would run something like this: "I know how everybody else is. How are you?" And that question would confuse me because I hadn't known how I was most of my life. When we finally got down to how do you work step one, see, if you're listening really carefully, you're going to conclude this guy's really retarded emotionally and spiritually. I think there are people today who are still amazed that I stayed and got anything. I mean, I've known Melody and Willie since the beginning. And plenty of people have said, "Joe, you were so angry. I had two ladies say, we wanted to kick your ass." You know, Gloria, God bless you for having all that time. When I heard people had things like 39 years, I thought, if I ever get that old, maybe I'll join Al-Anon. I thought, you know, if you got to sit here 39 years, aren't you taking notes? It's 1 through 12 and 1 through 12. How long can that take?
So I wasn't the most ready learner. But remember, I'm going to lose my employment if I don't stay, and I'm thinking, easy does it.
Keep coming back.
And the Glendale ladies didn't buy any of it. Come on, honey, get in the car. And they would kidnap me to coffee. And Lucy Crane flat out said she would catch me between a couple of those blue-haired ladies from the Milano Club and the Windsor Club in Glendale, and they would just feed me program when I thought I was eating pie. And sometimes get in the car. Richard had a little get in the car in him. Well, I remember one time the people who told me they were going to get rid of me had just done a number of things that were completely wrong. I can't remember any of them, but I called to complain about him, and he said, I want you to bring an overnight bag and your shaving kit and meet me on Sepulveda Boulevard by your office at about 2:30 Friday. I honestly can't remember that you told me where we were going. And Richard kidnapped me, and I about 5:30 we pulled into San Luis Obispo to the you know, mid-coast convention up there for the weekend. I didn't even know I needed that. See, people in program will help you discover what you really truly need. And we heard a great speaker and had some fellowship up there. And by the end of the weekend, I thought my office team had improved a great deal. So on step one of my writing assignment, Richard was in the Naval Reserve for many years, and evidently they do a lot of writing in the Navy. And so I was to write on all the things over which I had been powerless. When I was new in program, there was a guy who said, I thought it said power lips. So on my list of powerless, I'm pretty OCD kind of guy. I didn't want to miss anything. So I think I wrote about 7 pages of things like weather, earthquakes, tornadoes. Toward the end, it dawned on me, wives, girlfriends, my family, the president. But I'll tell you a little bit of a story about myself. One time I was coordinating an honors recruiting event down at USC, and one of the chemistry profs had just won a Nobel Prize in chemistry. He was seated in the front row next to the university president, and I was coordinating this event, and it rained. And I apologized to everybody that I hadn't been able to stop the rain. You'd think somebody with a lot of formal education would have an ounce of common sense. That's what one of the high school graduate ladies said to me one night. And she was talking about my choices in women. Other people look at the kind of woman I find attractive and they think, she looks like trouble. I look at her and I think, I might be able to help her. Maybe I ought to marry her. And then the big kicker that is one of the reasons I stayed, maybe we can spend you well. And I once sponsored a guy who said to me, I had just taken some crazy person to San Francisco for the weekend, and we pretty much shopped and ate, and you can guess the rest. And he said to me, Joe, you can take me to San Francisco. I mean, even the guys I sponsor think I'm nuts. And by the way, just so you don't think Al-Anon cures the grip, blindness, and cancer, I was driving through Glendale tonight. My sponsor tells a story about one time he saw a bumper sticker that said Humpty Dumpty was pushed. And there went the next several hours. Well, I'm driving up Glendale Avenue on the way to... I mean, my mind, you know, Irish setters are inbred, and they will run off the porch, and nothing's there. Driving up Glendale Avenue, and I see this sign that says, Tax and Immigration Counseling. Now, I know my mind is not always politically correct, but I thought, you know, if you go back to El Salvador, you won't owe a dime of federal tax. It's just where my mind is. It's like, what am I even paying attention to that sign for? I'm trying to get to a meeting. I don't think I'm all that well wrapped yet. But I know that people in Al-Anon understand that thing. I heard Dr. Paul talk one time. He said, I don't have any problems. He said, I have only passing thoughts. And he said, now and again, I'll grab on to one of those, and once I've thought about it for 20 minutes, it's a problem. That's the way my mind is. Sober. Doesn't take any substances in there. So, you know, several AAs have joked with me, you know, Al-Anon... AAs need to stay sober, but some Al-Anons could probably use a drink or two. just to kind of lighten up. And I will tell you this, I don't think this often, but maybe once in about 50 meetings, somebody will come in and I'll think, honey, if I lived with you, I would need a drink. And yes, it's sometimes the guys. Anyway, that's so you can understand why I needed to work the first step. Those are all things that I'm powerless over. My mind, what you do, what you think, what you do to me, what you do behind my back, what you say to me, the morning news. And I've never had anybody who knew me for any length of time who came up to me and said, Joe, you really weren't powerless. You were just kidding yourself. No, I was big time powerless when I got to Al-Anon. The second step talks about being restored to sanity. And I heard a tape of Chuck Chamberlain one time, and he was lecturing on the 12 steps for what became the compiled book, A New Pair of Glasses. And on this tape, he says, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. He says kind of dryly, you know, there's an implication there. And the AAs just about fall off their chairs. Ah, insane. Yeah, I drove the truck through a window. Yeah, I was insane. Al-Anons, I've noticed, never laugh at that. Must be talking about the lady next to me. She's got it bad. Yeah, I did a lot of insane things. One of my insane behaviors that had absolutely nothing to do with my alcoholic father, in fact, most of the time he would say to me after one of these long, dramatic country and western song affairs of mine, what did you take up with that woman for, son? She has problems. So even the sober alcoholic thought my choices left something to be desired. When I was new in program, I thought the phone list was kind of like the Gallup poll in reverse. I would sort of call people until I found one who would agree with me, and that's what I would do. Wasn't interested in doing a different thing, just the same thing. And I now realize the people who agreed with me had been coming to about 3 meetings. They were like the newest newcomer. And once I really hit it big, I was trying to get somebody to endorse the idea of driving by what's her name's house at 3 a.m. Now, I never assaulted a woman or wanted to hit a woman. I really didn't know what I was going to do when I went there. I usually didn't knock on the door at 3 a.m., but I was just cruising by to check. A little detective work, bird dog work. research at 3 a.m. I was coming about 10 years until I realized at 3 a.m. most people are in bed. But not me. I was usually up obsessing on what's her name. And I hit the jackpot. This newcomer said, "Well, we'll drive by yours, and then we'll drive by mine." I hit the quinella. So now it's 4:30, and we're eating pie at some coffee shop, endorsing each other's crap. And the sun is coming up. And I think this poor lady is crazy. So I don't think anybody's ever told me that my life was not powerless, unmanageable, and insane. I don't think anybody's ever come up and said, "You know, you really don't need to be here anymore. Here's your hall pass out of here. You're clean now." Excuse me. I go to meetings because I earned a seat in here. It's not an accident that I'm here. Step 3 talks about made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Now, if you look at that closely, it was printed with italics under the phrase "as we understood him" in steps 3 and 11. And I'm a big history buff, and I've read a lot about the founding of AA and Al-Anon. And Bill Wilson did not write the phrase "as we understood him" in the original steps. But the atheist and agnostic members of Alcoholics Anonymous said, "Bill, plenty of people have been turned off by bad experiences with organized religion. Not everybody sees Jesus on the road like St. Paul's conversion." And Bill had a real kind of aha, I saw the light burning bush experience. And they said, "Let's not make that the normative experience for people in 12-step programs." So that phrase, "as we understood him," allows the atheist Hell's Angel that I heard at an AA meeting once say that for a long time his higher power was the Pacific Ocean, and before that, an oak tree. I just want to offer you that, because there's usually one person or two in a meeting this size who aren't into the God thing or having a little trouble with that for those same reasons. I, too, grew up in an organized religion and had a lot of crap around it, including, you know, Freud said we project onto God our experience with our parents. And I don't know why, except that I loved him for years. I was the oldest of the 4 kids, and we'd be cutting up on a Saturday morning, and he sort of elected me chairman of that. I was always right behind him in the car. He would smack me in the teeth with the back of his hand over and over again. Now, only a crazy person would keep sitting there, hoping next time would be different, and my daddy would say he loved me. You know, it just occurred to me recently, that was pretty nutty. Kid, what were you thinking? I was thinking maybe my dad will show he loves me and will quit whacking me in the mouth. Because you see, every kid needs to feel loved and safe in the world. And it never happened in those days that he was drinking. He was hungover. We were like a rock band back there to him with a headache, hungover. That's the disease of alcoholism. I don't think he ever meant to hurt me. He had a headache. It was like I was playing cymbals in his ear. See, that's not somebody's fault. And by the way, I realized after years in Al-Anon that my father was what I was, the son of an alcoholic. For his dad died when my dad was 15 years old of the disease of alcoholism. My dad had to drop out in the middle of his sophomore year and go to work laying brick. And he was a bright man. He could walk a job and figure board feet and how many bricks he needed to put up a job And the only tool he ever used was a primitive engineering slide rule. He was a brilliant man. The big book of AA says that a man takes a drink, and then the drink takes the man. I see pictures of my mom and dad, and they're as handsome a couple as you would see as young people in their 20s when they met. I don't think she intended to marry an alcoholic, but you know, alcoholics can be very fun and charming. And my mother adored my father, and he loved her. And I watched the two of them deteriorate emotionally, spiritually, and physically with the advancing of the disease of alcoholism. Thank God, when I was about 12 years old, my mom joined Al-Anon and went for over 30 years. She's still alive, and Dad died in 91, the year I did entertainment at the convention here in the Valley. That month that my dad died, I went out and spoke to Al-Anon meetings in LA County 12 times. And I want you to know I never mentioned it, because dying of liver cancer to an extent is an outside issue. But I want you to know by the time that he died, I knew that I loved my father and that he had the disease of alcoholism. And I could tell him I loved him and forgive him, and know that the program had helped me clean up that bond between us. So I did turn my life and my will, such as I knew how to do in my early months of Al-Anon, and went on to four. And I think to date I've done four complete of the old 60 or 80 page book, Blueprint for Progress, and read it to my sponsor, which is step five, made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. Now, I realize we have about five newcomers here tonight. And I'll tell you my first impression when I saw step four. What do you mean, an inventory of myself? Let me tell you the crap my dad pulled. What do you mean I'm going to look at my part in it? You got another thing coming. You ought to get rid of that thing. That's going to drive off newcomers. I would even say things like that from the podium. Like, you wonder why this program isn't growing? Look at that step. That's bad PR. Are you nuts? I mean, you can do that, but hide it somewhere. You know, like a car dealer, it's in the fine print. If the engine falls out, oh, well. So I did the fourth step, and in five admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I went and read my stuff to Richard. I remember we spent 3 hours, three consecutive Thursdays, with me reading those. And if it's a little intimidating to you, I don't know what your sponsor said, but I can remember the exact words, which is a little scary. Be careful what you say to people. I heard two or three times, that sounds pretty human to me. And I think once or twice I heard, you may want to write over there in the back about certain amends that I may have to make when I get to the 8 and 9 step amends. And you know what? It didn't kill me. In fact, the big book says those steps separate the men from the boys, or in the case of, as a friend of mine calls it, hen meetings, the ladies and the girls. You know, you got to be a grown-up to stand in a mirror and say, this is me. This is my deal. This is what I did sober. And 6 and 7 talk about defects of character or shortcomings. And Bill Wilson once wrote, he only changed the words because he didn't want to use the same expression twice, which means they're roughly synonymous. Became ready and then humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Now, fear came up for me at that point, and if you haven't figured this out, there's a lot of crap that runs through my mind that I get called intellectual for. And So this is absolutely serious. I got afraid. I thought, you know, if I give all that away, will there be any Joe left? It scared me. Thought alcoholism took so much of me away, like my childhood, my hope, my positive outlook on life. I was so angry when I was new that the women said, you know, you were really flat out scary. And those two women who said, I'd like to kick his ass, told that to Lucy Crane. And Lucy Crane is not unlike Richard. She doesn't ever say a whole lot, but she said, you're going to pray for Joe. And I'm so grateful that they had her as a sponsor. Because either one of these ladies, you know, I could see them with a fry pan or a rolling pin at 2 a.m. explaining things to the alcoholic. These were ladies who could have, they could have readjusted my facial structure. But Lucy put them on their knees. See, no matter what kind of a crazy deal you have here, they're going to love you and pray for you here. They're going to take you to coffee and to meetings and to conventions. They're going to share our loving program of recovery with you. 8 and 9, I made a list and I spoke to some people. I felt I needed to make amends to my dad. And so I wrote to Dad and I said, all of the crazy women I've picked, the jobs I've opened my big mouth at and lost in an eye blink, and just many crazy decisions I've made in my life, I no longer blame you for. My father was a tough guy, tough bar fighter. And my mom told me after he died that on the day he got that letter, he came to her, tears rolling down his face, and said, see, it wasn't all my fault. There's a page in the One Day at a Time book that talks about the lady who gets up in the morning and rattles the pans and slams the covered doors at the alcoholic. And it talks about the burden of guilt and shame that the drunk bears inside in silence, trying to kill that pain with more booze. And there's another page about sarcasm, the tearing of flesh. See, these are some of the Al-Anon character defects that I had, because I had that look in my eyes, if you touch me, old man, I will kill you. It's just not that fun spending about 30 years with a son who wants to murder you or who wishes you dead. And you better believe I had ways of communicating that. And I'm here to tell you that a person with that much rage has a spiritual problem. And I always thought forgiving him was letting him off easy. I never realized how hating him was hurting me. And I will tell you this, if you carry a lot of hate in your heart, you won't attract anybody kind and loving to put up with you. You've got yourself painted into a corner there, buddy. I'll just tell you that. So that was one of my big amends to my old man. And then 10, 11, and 12, talk about continuing to take personal inventory. One of the guys I used to sponsor thought it said, and when we were wrong, probably admitted it. some are sicker than others. I do believe that if I gave a lengthy explanation, that you would see that everything I did made perfect sense. And my sponsor, when I call him about one of these lengthy explanations, he used to give me 2 to 3 sentences, but I'll put "and" in the middle of them, and it'll be 3 paragraphs when I'm through editing. So Richard now only allows me 1 sentence with 2 "ands" in it. And so I'm on a tight rope, and I hope you pick a sponsor who doesn't think you're cute either. Richard loves and works with me in a very kind and dear way, but I don't get away with anything. 11 talks about prayer and meditation. That's a step you can work out of order, in my opinion. If you're new tonight, get to the literature table and buy one of our daily readers. Go to lots of meetings, get a sponsor, and work the steps. That's what we do here, to be able to laugh as we do at these formerly painful things. And then 12 is what we're doing tonight, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We tried to carry this message to others and to practice these things in all our affairs, these principles. So they said stop at 8:25, and I thank you for having me.
Guys, let's thank our speaker, Joe, again. Jack, what page is the closing on?
24.
Will you come and read it?
I'm Jack. In closing, I would like to say that the opinions expressed here were strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you liked and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. A few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If you try to keep an open mind, you will find help. You will come to realize that there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. We aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. Will all who care to stand and join me in closing with the Lord's Prayer. Who's large and in charge?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work.
Good job.
It works.